I ain't telling I'm an alcoholic. Usually I sit back in the back there every Friday because I just like to come in different stories. These stories kind of help me out anyway because it's better than watching the news or watching something else. So at any rate, the reason why I just decided to do this was just because if you don't try something new, then you're never going to get anywhere. So I was like, well, I'm going to try something new. Where I come from, they never had any AA meetings or speaker meetings, so it was always just a little groups. And they'd have a speaker meeting maybe once a month. They call it an intergroup, and then everybody would come together, and usually somebody who's had long-term sobriety would speak. So I never was used to hearing anyone else speak. At any rate, I just made an outline of what I was like. Well, I was born in 64. My mom and dad. My mom was Native American. My dad was Swedish-Polish. And let's see, my dad, he worked as a steel worker, poured steel his whole life. And then, so I guess the middle class, you know, family, whatever. And my mom, she was, my mom was an alcoholic in the family. So that was the point in our life where I understood that, you know, what alcoholism was, but, and that, you know, being a kid, you never really wanted to talk much about that. You know, you go to school and, well, what happened last night? Well, the cops were over last night. You know, you just don't come up and start talking about stuff like that. You just go, I'm here. I got a lunch. I made my own lunch to come to school because, you know, everybody else was hungover at home. But I'm here. At any rate, I can say my first drink was, I was 7 or 8, and mom and dad would have these, what they call it, that big book there, the whoopee parties or whatever. People would come over and everybody would get all drunk. And then, of course, sometimes after everybody left and there'd be fights, and like I said, that's when the cops would come. But then in the morning, they would be sleeping, and those kids, my brothers, because I got two brothers and a sister, but my sister came relatively later, 15 years after me. But at any rate, we would go, come down to the into the kitchen there, and they would have those returnable bottles, you know, in the cases, and we would sneak whatever bottles we could find that still had beer inside them. We never really thought to open up a new one because we were kids. We thought, oh, they counted them or something, but they never counted anything. You know? They just drank them. So at any rate, that was like the first time I ever drank beer. After the parties, and then later on in life, then my mom and dad would have a kid come and drink with them, and I don't know, probably 10, 12 years old, we would sit at the parties with the rest of the adults and drink, and you pretty much just get smashed, and no one really cared. You know, it was just the way things were in the house. And well, so eventually, you know, there was drinking in the house, and I was drinking with the mom and dad, and then as I got older, and I knew that things weren't quite right, and I was trying to hide these feelings about that, what was going on, I started in with my friends, and we started smoking drugs, smoking weed, doing all that other stuff when we were, as kids, you know, you experiment and try whatever you can, and I did quite a bit of that, and probably one of the more potheads out of all the rest of the kids that were in school, and you had classes, you know, you had your jocks, you had your freaks, you know, you had your nerds, and you had, you know, all this other stuff. Well, I was a freak. I was a pothead, you know. And that was the way I grew up, and then I just didn't figure I was ever going to get any better in life, and I might as well just enjoy what I had right there, and that was it. You know, I never thought I was going to go anywhere, and I just thought that this is what about the best life is going to get, is that I'll get stoned and I won't have to worry about any of having to deal with the rest of the world or anything, and I'm not going to really get anywhere. And eventually I ended up in rehab by the time I was 15 or 16, somewhere around there. That was the first time I was in for the drugs, and it was more or less that my mom had already tried AA before this, and she had already failed at that and started drinking again. But she knew that I had a problem. So she pointed that out, and so I had to go. So I went to DePaul, and that was, well, I don't know, people have been around before, they might remember DePaul over in Milwaukee. And that was my first taste of, the 12-step program. And I understood what it was. I would go to the NA meetings, and they'd do that. And it just lasted for a while. I tried to stay sober. They would have their parties, and then instead of me getting beer, I would go down to the store and get cases of soda pop. And I would just drink soda pop at the parties. But the parties never stopped. It always, that was nonstop. And then, eventually, I started drinking and smoking pot again. And then I moved up north to live with my grandma on my senior year of high school. The CEO was my sophomore year, my junior year. That spring, my grandfather died. And I was always really close to my grandma. She was the only one that seemed to be stable that was in my world that I could always go to and I felt comfortable with. So my grandfather died, and I had always spent all my summers as much as I could away from home because I didn't like the way the home was. And I spent it up north with my grandmother in a little town called Marinesco, Michigan. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of it, but it's pretty much not much there. And that senior year, I didn't miss not leaving anybody down there in school or anything because, like I said, they were just like, oh, he's a freak and a pothead, and he's, I was troubled. I had friends that, we're constantly in trouble. We're always doing things, And I just got to talking with the one, my helper, today about it, and he was talking about, he was making forts and stuff when he was a kid because we were talking about that everybody wants electronic games. Anyway, I was like, yeah, I remember we used to make we'd have forts because there was an industrial area between our neighborhood and the school, and we'd have to go walk through there all the time. But we had forts inside there all over, and that's where we'd have our pots inside there and our beer, and we'd chase girls and what have you. And that was the type of kid I was. I just had it for a good time. I didn't really care. And then, like I said, I moved up north to stay with my grandmother my senior year. And I ended up spending more time out in the woods fishing and hunting than going to school. I actually got suspended from school for 2 weeks for being gone for 2 weeks. this really made a lot of sense. But before I ever went up north, though, I did decide I was going to go in the Marine Corps because my dad was a Marine. My older brother was a Marine, and I figured it was up to me to go, and my uncle was a Marine, kind of family tradition. So I signed up before I went, and some people had asked me, why would you choose the Marine Corps, other than just my relatives and stuff. I was like, I thought the uniforms are cool. that was basically it. I was like, I don't know about all the rest. I asked my cousin, he went in the Army, and I said, well, how was that? And he's telling me, he says, it's no harder than football practice. I was like, well, I played football. I was the only pothead that was on the football team, but I was the only one that knew how to center the ball. So I got to play there. Well, I did go into the Corps, and that was another part of my life. Yeah, into the Corps. And when I was in there, I did relatively well. I didn't smoke any pot, I didn't do any drugs or anything. But I started to learn how to drink, Because that was one of the other things that, it was the only thing that I really could hold on to because they started whiz quizzes and everything else while I was in the Corps. And, you come up with a dirty urine, then you would lose ranks and stuff. I wasn't going to have any of that. But when I went into boot camp, I was more comfortable there than I was at my home. Growing up, I know I've told this before, but knowing that when I was getting hollered at there, or if I was, they still slapped us and stuff back then in the boot camp. Well, at least I knew it was for a reason. There was going to be a reason. It wasn't that these disciplines were coming out of somewhere where you didn't see what, or you didn't understand what was happening. You know, well, what the hell did I do wrong? You know, I'm getting hit again, and I'm getting hollered at by my parents constantly. Well, in the core, that wasn't fair. I could get hollered at, and I could just smile away, and okay, bitch at me all you want, because this ain't nothing compared to what I grew up in. You know, the other guys are over there crying and stuff the first couple days. I was just laughing on the inside. I was like, I can't believe you guys are breaking down over this. This is nothing. And then, well, I did well in the Corps. I ended up making it to a corporal by the time I got out. I probably should have stayed in, but when I went to get out, I was at the point that I wanted to go to college. I actually wanted to improve myself at that time. I was like, I want to get better. I don't want to be here. And the next contract that I had to sign was, I was going to be a Marine security guard. I was going to go off to embassy duty. And I had to sign a contract that said I wouldn't go to college or get married or anything else for another 3 years. I had to dedicate myself to the Corps for another 3 years. Okay, I'm not going to do it. But while I was in the Corps, I traveled all over the planet. I've been all over Asia, been down to Australia, I've been to Norway, and of course I've been down to Mexico. And then those places, every one of them I ended up getting drunken. You know, and quite a few of them, when I was overseas on the West Pack, which are like, they're the first line that if anything happens politically, we're the ones that go in right away. You know, and that would happen quite often, that live rounds and stuff would be up on the deck and we'd be all painted up and ready to go. You know, nervous as all hell. You know, but it's something that, you know, that's what you signed up for. But at that point, my life was so much chaotic, you know, that what was happening, that I was constantly getting fights whenever I got in port. I'd get hauled in by the shore patrol, and I'd wake up, with a bruise up face, bruise up knuckles, and I'd ask the guys, you know, well, what happened last night? So where's my Liberty card? Where's my ID? And they're like, the CO's got them. You got to go get them from him. And I go see the CO, and he'd ask me, Kevin, you know, what happened last night? I really don't know. I guess I got in a fight. Judging by my knuckles, I might have won. He would just say, well, now you got to stand duty for Thanksgiving. And the next time, it was Christmas. The next time after that, it was New Year's. And I didn't really care, you know. I don't care if it was Valentine's Day or what. I was overseas, and I was just wound up. But my CO, I was a radio operator, so I was a good friend of his. So he knew me. Then I got out of the Corps. And I did go to school. I tried to go to school. I didn't do real good there either, because I ended up going out and getting drunk all the time when I was supposed to be in classes. And that's when I met my wife, Becky. And we ended up getting married. We got two kids. It was probably one of the better moments in my life, you know. I was like, finally things are starting to work out for me. And I got a job, and I was starting to do all the things I was supposed to do in this world. You know, of course I didn't go to college. Things didn't work out that way. But I ended up in a job where it was something I liked to do. I ended up working with engineers and working on these drill rigs off. And, you know, they gave me responsibilities. I could operate the machine. I could travel all over the country wherever they wanted me to go to. And I was getting all my paperwork and all the stuff together, travel, but I was gone the whole time. For 20 years, I was on the road. And, well, Beck was at home. And some months, I'd only come home like one weekend. And other times, it was, I'd be gone 3 weeks, 2 weeks, 10 days on, 4 days off. And I would travel all over the place. Just, I wasn't driving the equipment there. They were flying me back and forth just so that I could get their information for them. But this whole time, that's when my drinking started really picking up again. And that's when I started in with the cocaine, because we were working constantly, you know, and the guys that I worked with, they had lots of money, and all the other kind of stuff was going on. And that ended up that tore me apart real fast. I ended up I wanted to go into rehab then, and I did go into rehab. Back to DePaul again I went, and I ended up staying sober for a while. It was maybe a year, year and a half, whatever it was. I tried as hard as I could, but I still couldn't get this program. I couldn't figure it out. It's the second attempt at 12 steps. And we had some problems, some marriage problems, with young people. And eventually, I decided to take a job with another drilling company up north, up in the UP, and I left. And I went up there, and I ended up having to travel all over the place again with them too. But I ended up starting drinking again while I was up there. And this went on for a while, and I ended up going back into rehab again. This time I went to the VA, and I went and I tried to stay sober. They kept telling me there that I should go for long term, and I shouldn't just want to stay to 30 days or 40 days, whatever they wanted me to stay, and I should go to their longer term program. And I still wasn't really getting it. All I wanted to do was just stay sober. I didn't want to listen to all the other parts of the AA program. This wasn't me. If you understand, the kid that grew up and I wanted to party, just wanted to have a good time. I didn't want to have the responsibilities, and I didn't have a family life, with the alcoholism and stuff that was going on, where I had anything to look back to compare what my life was becoming. There was no, you shouldn't be this way. You shouldn't, shouldn't talk this way to other people. You shouldn't, I can say this. One of the defects that I have is that when I was doing an evaluation at work one time, the boss had told me, he says, "You'll always act as though you're being persecuted." And I was like, "Well, I am." That's just the way I felt like it all the time. You're always doing this to me. You're always taking my tools from me. You're messing with my life. And it's all your fault that all this is all that way. Well, I've learned now that was a big problem with me. But I never had anything to look at as far as my parents or my brothers or my sisters to say that this was wrong, because this was what was always accepted in the house. Well, it was supposed to be that way. You're supposed to get whatever you need, and point fingers at each other and cut everybody down. I finally had to start figuring out this program, and that didn't happen for probably two more stints in rehab. One more was in VA, and another one was up in Marquette. And then finally all hell broke loose. I lost my job. I pretty much drank myself out of that job. I can just admit it now and just say that was it, and that's what it was all about. But I'd always like to say that was the recession that screwed me over. But the fact was, I went and I was drunk all the time. Because they're always telling me, "Oh, you always smell with alcohol," and I was like, "Well, then send me to a client that aren't going to be there on the site or something. I can drink then, and then nobody'll know." It wasn't getting any better, and finally they would tell me, they said, "Well, why don't you just quit?" And I was like, "Why should I quit? I got a job." But we don't want to. They didn't want to fire me or anything, so they just finally just told me that we're going to sell off the equipment that you run, and that's it. We're just going to terminate your position then. Nice way just saying see you later. But they really did get rid of the equipment, and that was the time for me to get out. And I spent two more years staying drunk. I sit at the computer playing Farmville and drinking whiskey. This was the extent of my day. And all that I looked forward to was just being able to pass out and then wake up again and then do it all over again. And that was I look at the whiskey bottle stacking up inside the recycle bin, and it would be, well, at least 14 jugs every 2 weeks where the recycle people would take away. I was like, I wonder if they think I'm putting this in a car or something, you know, or running something off of this, because there sure is a lot there, you know. But my alcoholism had blinded me to, you know, that everybody else could see it and I couldn't see it. You know, I knew that something was wrong, and I knew that I had the alcoholism. And doctors started telling me, you know, Kevin, that your kidneys are shutting down, you know, and you know, I couldn't swallow for a while because the whiskey had been burning up my throat so bad. And I was like, well, I don't know what that's all about. And I remember many times having to keep a bottle of Pepto-Bismol with me just so I could take my whiskey. And I still couldn't see that I had problems. You know, it was just, the alcohol completely had me blindfolded as to what was going on. And then finally I had this fleeting thought when I was sitting there at my computer playing Farmville, looking at that jug of whiskey. I was like, God, help me away from this. You know, I really think that something's gone wrong here, and I really need some help, because look at me. You know, I can't do it on my own. I really can't do it on my own. But I didn't want to go try AA either, because every time that I went, I always failed. You know, it wasn't there for me. I just couldn't. I didn't want to go talk to the people either when I was drunk or anything, but I sure knew that I needed something, and I couldn't find it. And so I ended up looking around. I found some jobs, and I hadn't been drinking. I sat and I shaked and jumped up and down for how long until the alcohol got out of my system. And then I would start driving for trucks, driving trucks, pedaling freight around. And when I was doing that, I wasn't drinking, but the weirdest things would happen to me. I'd try to turn a corner, and I'd bump the pole and with the trailer and pull the wires out of somebody's building. Never even knew I did it. You know, I unloaded the whole the truck, whatever I had to do, and I left, and they get back and tell me, oh, you see, here they cut some wires. I was like, well, how the hell did that happen? They said, well, I did bump the pole, you know. And then later on, when the other guy was with it, he was like, okay, I'm going to show you this other route. We're going around and going to deliver to a gas station, and I'm trying to turn around a corner, and the top of the trailer hits one of the signs and busts the sign up. And I was like, this is completely nothing like I would do, you know. I've had responsibilities. I got to travel all over the country, you know. I've millions of dollars of equipment, and I can't drive a truck, you know, and then they let me go. I was like, this just isn't right. You know, but I accepted it. I was like, okay, this is what's happening. Look for work again. I looked for work, and I found work down in Waukesha. And this company, they're like, well, at first they wanted to hire me as a contract employee. And I was like, okay, well, I'll try it. You know, I'd do that. But then they said, no, we're just going to hire you on as a regular driller. And so I said, all right, I'll go there and I'll drill for you guys. I get there and I find out that these guys know nothing about the stuff that I know about drilling. But they wanted to get involved in coring rock at the sand searches up the road up there. I said, well, okay, well, I know how to core rock and I can set you up. I'll tell you what equipment to buy. And I get them all together, fixed the drill up, made it all set, and got the contract, went up and started drilling the job. Worked at that for probably a month or so. And got everything going. I come in one Monday morning, and they said, that's it, we don't need you. They said that, you know, we got somebody else that can run the rig, and you're fired, you can go. So they had all my tools and everything else. I had to have them ship my tools back home to me, and I was really disappointed at this point. I was sitting inside the car out there in front of a movie theater in Waukesha, thinking to myself, God, I know that there's a reason for this happening, but I just can't understand it, you know. And I was skeptic, and I really want to drink, but I'm not going to drink because I know I'm going to mess up even worse yet. Still, I ain't going to AA or anything, just trying not to drink, you know, trying anything. So after a while, I thought about it, and it was another company I worked for down there before, We stopped over to them and talked to them. The guy who was in charge of the place turned out to be one of the guys I worked with, you know. Now he's the boss there. He said, Kevin, he says, I got to lay off two guys. He said, but I tell you what, he says, I know this guy that's up there, Madison. He says, here's his name. You can give him a call. So give him a name, give him a call. And 1, 2, 3, I'm over here working in Madison. And I moved down out of the woods for the first time in 20-some years. We moved down to a city. And when I was here, I was trying to get sober, and I was trying to stay sober, and my mom was passing away of cancer at the same time. And I had a lot of things that were really messing with me. You know, I just didn't know how to handle all this that was going on, and I didn't have anybody in a program or anybody to talk to or anything. And I ended up coming into work one morning. I don't even think I was hungover or anything like that, because I was just sitting there in the car, and I ended up having a panic attack. And I didn't know anything about these things. Called my wife. I said, come and help me. And she took me to the VA. And when I got over there, then right away, all my records show that I'm an alcoholic, you know. And they said, oh, you got to quit drinking. And I said, I've been trying to. And so they put me up with, what do they call those, caseworker or whatever. And she started going over and telling me about, you know, that she was in the AA program and that she wanted, you know, that I had to do this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, I'll try all that, but I know that none of this stuff worked for me. Every time I went, I couldn't make AA work, and I just want to stay sober. That's all I want. I know that I realize it's a problem, and I've been trying to work at it. And then I'll start drinking on the weekends. I worked on a week, and I reward myself on a weekend. The car would just be like a beeline right into the liquor store. I'd be there looking at the whiskey, and I'd pick it up, put it at the counter. I know I shouldn't be doing this. And the next thing, I'm drunk for 2 days, you know. And I'd walk to the liquor store, you know, on Saturdays or whatever, just because I knew I shouldn't drive, you know. And I was feeling hollow, you know. I still needed something. And I finally started giving up, and I said, okay, I'll start taking Anabuse, whatever, just to quit this so that I don't drink even on the weekends. And the VA prescribed me the Anabuse, and then after I took it for a while, then all of a sudden I realized that if I don't take it for a couple days, then I'll be able to drink again without any of the side effects, because I had been on Anabuse before trying to quit. And I did that, and then I ended up going back to the VA with my wife that time, and I talked with the counselor that was giving me the Anabuse, and I told him what I did, and he says, well, you're going to double your prescription. He goes, if you're really that serious about it, I'll double it up. You won't know how long it's going to last, and are you really that serious? I was like, I'm that serious that I'll have her watch me take my pills every morning so that I won't drink. So this went on for, I don't know, a couple, 3 months that I would take my pills. She would watch me in the morning. Every morning I'd bring in my little Easter basket full of all the little pretty pastel colors, and I'd take that, and maybe she'd be like, okay, let's make sure that you got the Anabuse in there, and I show her that was there, you know, and I took it. And after a while, I was taking those pills, and I thought to myself, I've been sober now for a couple three weeks or whatever it was, and I think I'll go to one of the meetings. So I went to the meeting over at St. Barnaby, you know, and I got in there. It's like, I'm actually listening to the people. Some of the stuff they're saying is making sense to me. I still don't want to speak out or tell them when they ask, you know, if anybody had a drink or whatever. I'm not bringing up my story, because I've been my whole life, I'm not telling anybody about what I am. And I found another one to go to on Tuesday. This is over in Cross Plains. So I go to Tuesday and I go to Sunday. And all of a sudden, I started realizing, I'm really starting to like what's going on. Now the program is starting to make some sense to me. Every time they had to go to rehab, I always had to go at least to step five before I could get out. And I knew how to get to there. But after that, I didn't know what a character defect was. And not a clue, because, like I said, I had nothing to look to compare myself to. There was no one there, in my life. My wife. But I still, I was already just an alcoholic, so I didn't know where to begin. And I remember coming to the meetings and always saying, I'm here, but I want to get to there, and I don't know how to get to there. There's hundreds and thousands of questions I got, how do I get there? But I still couldn't find it. Nobody would come up and held my hand and say, here, this is the way to it. I ended up, I think it was the spiritual awakening, the experience finally came somewhere along the line. It wasn't like an epiphany that God hit me or struck me or anything, but all of a sudden I started understanding what people were talking about and understanding what I was doing wrong, and all of a sudden it started making sense to me. I could understand what people were talking about. I understood what emotions were. I understand what feelings were. I never had none of this. This was completely something that was, I'd had nothing to do with talking about feelings with any of my friends or anything like this. This was not me. But I was willing to say, I want to change now. All those years before that I'd been trying to attempt to get sober, I didn't want to change. I just wanted to be me, because I didn't know what I could be. I didn't know how much more of a person I could be. And eventually, it's coming around. And like I say, coming up here to speak in front of you is just another step for me, because it's something I wouldn't have done. I would have been happy just to sit back in my corner and watch everybody and never say anything. But as I sit back there, I hear everybody else's stories, and I'm like, I got something like that. I understand what they're saying now. And I don't know that how long I've been sober. It's been over 15 months, 14 months. But this time around, I'm not feeling miserable. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling that I understand what's going on, and I care about my wife and my kids, and I care about other people, and this never was anything that I really cared about. I was just, I'm moving forward, and you're in my way. I'll say whatever to get you out of my way, and I don't care about your feelings. Now, even when I'm at work, I worry about whether or not I'm actually going to hurt my helper's feelings or something, because he keeps coming late, and I keep telling him, come on, guys, this is all you got to do, is just show up here early. It's not that hard. And I actually care about people. I had a friend that I worked with, and he was kind of probably one of the laziest men I've ever met in my life. He knows how to run a rig, but he'd rather sit and talk on that cell phone and, text all day long. Just terrible work ethics. And it used to just drive me insane. I'd be like, well, why can't this guy just, get with the program and do what he's supposed to, and help everybody else out here? And, he uses his tools, he just leaves them away wherever he's at, and he moves on, and I got to go back, I got to pick up this stuff and load it up for him. And after a while, I was like, I don't have to pay his wages. And the guy is great to talk to. He's one of the nicest persons you'd ever want to meet. And I was like, I can't believe it that I care about this guy. It was just, when I first started working here, it was before the program, and I just saw red every time I had to work with him. And now it's like I'm happy to see him during the day. you know, and just, you know, say hello or what have you. And I don't know, I could talk about all the steps and stuff. I don't really understand them all too well, but I understand that with coming here and still being around everybody, and that my higher power has been taking care of me, that that's all I really need. I don't really need to. The steps are coming to me, you know, slowly, and I don't have all the answers. You know, like I said, I had 1,000 questions before to try to figure, you know, thinking about this stuff. I don't even think I got through part of them, but I'm feeling better, and this all makes sense to me. And I'm more than happy to stay sober now. You know, I used to have the dreams about drinking constantly when I first quit. It was also encompassing every night. You'd be like, I got drunk again. I wake up, you know, and what the hell happened? No, you didn't. You know, you're still sober. Now the dreams are, someone's offering me drinks, and I'm telling them, no, I can't. That's not me. I'm not doing that. And I guess I'm happy and despair. I'm just happy to be here. I'm happy to say I'm a member of AA. And it's like the weight has been lifted, and I'm not being pushed into the ground anymore. No more panic attacks. No more waking up worrying about, you know, where my whiskey bottle's at, where the car is at, or, you know, what am I going to do the next day? Or as I really used to think about when I was driving into work, hungover, half drunk from the night before. Did everybody come to work like this? Does everybody feel like this? And I was like, I kept thinking that I would really like to just be able to come into work and watch the sunrise as I'm driving in and, you know, not be hungover. Now I got that. Every morning I get up, and every morning I drive into work. That's when I talk to God. I say, I don't like to put on the radio, but we ride in, thanks for today. You left us sober, sun shining, you know, even if it's raining and it's crappy out, I'm sober. And I think with that, I'm just going to go ahead and pass.